This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. We'll talk about grain markets, and especially grain markets as some of the shipping channels are being compromised, and also cattle. First off, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack last week at South Carolina State University.
To establish a financial assistance program for those who had experienced discrimination at USDA in the past through our farm service programs. That process is now in play. We're encouraging folks who have experienced discrimination in the past to apply for financial assistance. Pretty simple process. If you remember this website, it's 22007-22007, the word apply, APPLY, 22007apply.gov. You get all the information about being able to make an application for the financial assistance that's available.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. He's got a couple of website addresses, email, phone number, just ways you can talk one-on-one if you're interested, and we'll have that coming up for you here in a few minutes. But Bob, as we start our conversation, we're really winding down the end of the calendar year, but we're into a new year when it comes to what we talk about as far as commodities and trading. And I just wonder, how are things starting to look? I mean, are traders starting to look to 2024 now, or are we still focused on the crop that came out?
Both, to answer your question. It's a matter of the crop that came out and the supply that was generated from our production throughout the marketing year or the growing season. So there's that. But once we get that data, it all gets thrown into a balance sheet, then it becomes math and opinions about what the next dump could be, meaning in terms of South America and how things are going down there. So a bit of both, right? I mean, you get the production from the United States, it all gets thrown into the balance sheet, trickles on down, we see what's left at the end of the year with the ending stocks, we find out where it was in the beginning of the year with the beginning stocks, all based on marketing years, and then you got everything in between that's either add or subtract to that. And I don't think that really goes away. I mean, for people who are invested in these commodities, meaning your livelihood is based on it, and your livelihood could be your family business, which could be a farm, or it could be some sort of entity that has to procure the commodity processor, basically, in order to stay in business, then there's no way you turn it off. So we're watching that every single day, if not every single week and every single month, to see what the best scenario can be in terms of opportunities, but also the risks. And then when you start thinking about next year, I mean, the difference between next year and this year is going to be a matter of seconds, right? At midnight on December 31st. So really, yeah, I guess you start looking forward to a new year. There's always that psychology and that mentality that you expect things to be hopefully better or as good or maybe no worse than they were the previous year. And I think that'll start playing its way into the market too. But again, it'll just be more about looking at the balance sheet and kind of watching the day to day, see what things are looking like down in South America and how that plays out. And in particular, I'm talking about the crop down there. So yeah, you get some who are non-invested, meaning speculators, and maybe they'll be shut. Like, if you already had a great year, think about like an asset manager. You've had a great year. Do you want to risk some of the illiquid markets that could happen the tail end of December and maybe ding those good returns that you've gotten for the year? Probably not. So I would imagine that those who are in that fortunate situation are going to kind of wind down quicker than later, right? And then maybe re-up again in January, once liquidity comes back into the marketplace. And then there might be some who stick around who haven't had such a great year, and they might want to take advantage of some of the volatility if they can get on the right side and play it to hopefully reduce some of the losses that they've seen, or potentially, add to some of the more modest gains and see if they could play it that way. So it depends, I think, really, you know, where you're sitting and what your perspective and what your use of the market is. But net, just in terms of the ag markets, the traditional commodity markets, I don't think there's ever a true off switch. There's always going to be some heightened look at the marketplace to see, again, if you could take advantage of a situation and maybe sell your crop higher or if you need to, like, mitigate some risk. So I think that's how it plays out.
Now, one of the other things that is kind of working its way in, and maybe we're not seeing it yet, but dry conditions throughout Central America and i.e. Panama have really put pressure on the Panama Canal, and we use the canal for quite a few of our grains and oil seeds going through the canal, plus the low river levels on the Mississippi. Could that play into the discussion this year? Or I'm talking the marketing year.
Yeah, it's going to play into the discussion, no doubt about it, because we need to get our product from point A to point B. And the point A to point B route typically had been Panama. But as you mentioned, there's a big pinch there. And then you also talk about the low river levels in our delta. So those obviously are skewing some of the normal basis levels, which is going to make the market adapt in terms of pricing throughout the country. So you see a dip in the basis in the delta to kind of compensate for what's happening there. But you also see a relative, if not increase in prices in the Pacific Northwest, because in lieu of the Panama Canal, maybe in order to get our product around the world, we need to be looking more towards the Suez Canal. So that just changes the point of origin, shall we say, in terms of the logistics, not for every commodity, but for some commodities. And I think we're seeing that play out with the basis levels, and that's kind of helping redirect supply to different parts of the United States. But again, prices are adjusting and adapting to that. So that clearly is an important factor, because you need to get the stuff from point A to point B, and prices need to adjust accordingly, so it makes it worth it in either case. So we'll see how that plays out. But you're right. Things like that are some of the things that go into every trader's mind, and how they're impacting local prices, and how those local prices are impacting, you know, when and if you're going to hedge. Hopefully you're hedged the best you can be, but when and if you're going to hedge. And all that works its way into the futures market, because we either see pressure on the board in terms of the price, or we see some kind of rally as we see some kind of adjustment. And I think that's the way it'll play out. So I think that is an important factor, and we'll just have to see how those issues play out.
Now let's swing over and talk about livestock for a moment, and specifically the cattle market. Wow, what a lot of volatility. And when I talk about volatility, I'm talking about what appeared to be the bottom dropping out of the cattle market. What's happening there?
Yeah, and new swing lows today. The market for the Feb Live Cattle Futures contract, which is the most actively traded contract at the moment, ended at a price of, let's call it, 166.85. The low is 166.62, so about 25 cents, 25 points off the lows. And it had tried to rally earlier, but really couldn't sustain the rally, and the market pretty much broke and closed pretty much close to the low. So just technically speaking, that looks pretty bearish, which means it certainly seems like there's going to be some continuation to the downside. I hate to be put it in such a simple term, but it just feels like what goes up must come down at some points, right? Nothing cures high prices like high prices. And then when the psychology of the marketplace takes over and the prices start to dip as fast and furious as they had, then those who are the big speculators, meaning the funds, have to all hit the exits. Don't have to, but usually they do hit the exits right about the same time. And what had been a great scenario in terms of a bullish case for live cattle quickly turned south, right? So all those funds that were net long in big numbers had to get out, or chose to get out, cut their losses, and that helps drive this market down. So we've seen a series of new swing lows with modest bounces about halfway back on a daily chart for a number of months now. And eventually this thing will find its footing. It just hasn't quite found it yet. Cash has been kind of quiet. That doesn't help things too much. Choice was down last week. Select was near steady or so. Cash this week is called steady to about $2 lower. At least that's what the trade believes. In terms of the slaughter, you know, nothing spectacular there. So that's kind of indicating to the marketplace that at least the packer for the moment can kind of hold off and hopefully massage prices lower for at least when I say hopefully from their perspective, hopefully massage prices lower their input prices, over the short term here. And we'll see what happens there. Feeder cattle has been a driver to the downside. If you look at the feeder cattle prices, basically I think, has led the live cattle prices, not followed the live cattle prices, but led the live cattle prices lower. And it similarly today had a pretty good move to the downside, ending up near its lows. So we'll see how low it can go. I don't know if you recall, but back in early part of November, we were looking at some seasonal tendencies for some of these commodity markets, of which we mentioned the live cattle and the feeder cattle. And typically for the first half of November, you usually see some kind of dip in prices, some kind of push to the downside. And we actually saw that both in the feeder cattle and the live cattle. So I'm just going over data and looking at it over long term and talking about some of those seasonal tendencies. And then the second half of November, I don't know if we really saw a rally, but at least we saw a staving off of a continued push to the downside. And then what's supposed to happen? Well, actually, when you look at the seasonal for December for those two commodities, which are highly correlated most of the time, not all the time, live cattle and feeder cattle, you typically see in the first part of December a pretty good push to the downside. So I think that kind of just started a little bit early, being that that bounce that we saw back half of November wasn't really of any kind of big move. And I think that seasonal tendency also kicked in. So you got steady to weaker cash prices. You got a packer that seems like they're in control at the moment in terms of massaging prices lower. You got a seasonal tendency that's kind of kicking at the same time. And I think that's helping add to the, let's say, confidence and bearishness in that particular, those particular markets. And all those sums up to a market that's under some good pressure. I'm not going to pick a bottom. We're going to wait to see when the market finally has a retest of whatever swing low evolves. And with that failed retest, meaning it'll bounce, it'll come back down, and it won't make a new low. Maybe that'll be a sign that we'll start to see the thing move higher. And just to finish the thought, if you look at the seasonal tendency for cattle for this month, the Feb fat cattle, all right, it's supposed to start out weak, but actually 12 of the last 15 years, it's ended up higher than where it started at the beginning of December. So at some point, it seems to me, just from the data, that it's going to find a base and maybe work its way higher. We just don't know where yet. So we'll keep an eye out for that and hopefully be able to react accordingly when we see it.
Okay. Contact information. How do we do that one-on-one?
Contact info, you can give me a call. Number is 312-987-2053, or reach out via email. It's bmaurer, that's B-M-A-U-R-E-R, at manducatrading.com, or you can come visit our website at www.myfuturesadvisor.com.
Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
CalCon 24 is marching onward to Orlando, January 31st to February 2nd, 2024. Have your say in the future of the industry, network with fellow producers, or connect with friendly faces. Plus, the NCBA trade show will be on site with over 385,000 square feet of the latest and greatest in the cattle business to help your operation stay competitive and sustainable. Register today and learn more at convention.ncba.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Bob Maurer with Manduca Trading, Chicago.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Catch up with Bob Maurer online, myfuturesadvisor.com.
Countdown 24 is marching onward to Orlando, January 31st to February 2nd, 2024. Have your say in the future of the industry, network with fellow producers, or connect with friendly faces. Plus, the NCBA trade show will be on site with over 385,000 square feet of the latest and greatest in the cattle business to help your operation stay competitive and sustainable. Register today and learn more at convention.ncba.org.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Thanksgiving week precipitation put a damper on Mid-Atlantic wildfires that consumed over 60,000 acres in Virginia and North Carolina. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says even with that significant November wildfire activity,
we are coming to the end of, at least on paper, one of the most quiet wildfire seasons that we have seen in a generation.
The National Interagency Fire Center notes that with November's end,
we have seen less than 2.6 million acres of vegetation burned in the United States so far in 2023.
If those numbers hold, 2023 would be the smallest annual wildfire acreage consumption since 1998.
A year that 1.3 million acres burned across the country.
Contrasting the quiet activity in the western and central U.S., our nation's deadliest wildfire in a century, the Lahaina Fire in Hawaii, took place this year. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.